and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics and beyond make a lot of noise. It's episode 146, and I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars. And joining me this week, as always, are the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
The... Oh, you did that on purpose, didn't you, Dan? You can also hear the muttly laugh of the something-something Lord of Time and Space, known as Tony Esmond.
You were going to call me Osmond this week.
I know.
That's going to be the joke.
Tony Osmond? Don't.
That's good to be. It's good to be here.
You know our listeners, Tony. You know that may become a thing if you start it.
I've had worse.
Yes.
I've had worse.
That's true. Yeah. And that's just from me and Dan. Yeah. Yes, we are back after last week's triumphant show at London Comic Con. So yeah, but we're back in the studio
good fun,
again.
It was good fun.
Yeah,
yeah, it was fantastic. It was a great day, and the show and the audio actually came out okay. So thank you to all the nice,
believe it.
Yeah, all the nice comments on the show. We truly appreciate it, and thank you again to the Leamington guys for having us. It was amazing.
Yeah.
So
got some new listeners and all that, didn't we?
Yeah. Well, hopefully. Hopefully they haven't been put off.
But, I got an email from John Ottaway, and all it said was, "I didn't hear you say the word trombone."
Oh, dear God.
John was a dude.
Yes.
There was a couple of people in the audience who were kind of like nodding when people were saying stuff, and I was like, oh, this is good. People are agreeing what we're saying.
Because normally we have no frame of reference to what we talk about, do we?
Just presume we're wrong, and then...
Yeah. We're wrong every week until someone agrees with us.
Yeah, but crass and wrong, generally.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But always informative and a lot of fun.
Do you know what else is informative?
No. Not yet.
Hell yeah, not yet.
God, jumping the gun. I know you're excited to be back to our usual format, Tony, but just hold your horses.
I'm in a hotel room. I'm not even at home. It's exciting.
We don't... Look, if you want to know why, send us an email at...
I love being in a hotel. You can just sort of let it all hang out, can't you? Just do what you like.
Literally.
Yeah. Oh, dear. But anyway, God bless our guest who's just listening to this thinking, why? Why did I say yes? Yeah. But yes, we do have a guest this week, and we're joined by the writer of the cyberpunk sci-fi epic Kiltopia, which I know a lot of our listeners know about, and it not only looks badass, but was recently hugely successful on Kickstarter, just a little bit successful, and now has been signed to BHP Comics.
Oh, yes. Cool. I didn't realise that. Oh, yes. Nice. I like them. They're good people.
They are indeed, as is our guest. Yes, this week we're joined by the mighty Dave Cook. Hello, Dave.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Dave.
I was very professional there, sitting through all that.
Yeah.
Bear in mind, you've had to put up with that for about the last 20 minutes off air.
Yeah. Oh, dude, I was honestly like trying not to crease myself at one point. So, yeah, it was difficult. I was struggling.
I told you he'd change. I told you as soon as we come on, Vince would change. He becomes a different character on air, doesn't he?
You called me an Alan Partridge. I don't know how to take that.
Yeah, that's all fair.
Does that mean that one day I'm going to inadvertently kill one of our guests?
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Oh dear. Anyway, I'll tell you what is killer though.
Oh my god.
And I'll tell you, it's all the amount of comics you can get on comichouse.com. God, yes, I'm back in the room.
There's no mute on this fucking thing I'm on.
You can't mute gold. You can't. Yes, and Comic House is gold. Yes, and they put up with our terrible sponsorship ads every week. Yes, because you never forget them. You never forget
them. You don't.
No, you don't. And thanks to Pete and the Comic House. No, in all seriousness, thanks to Pete and the Comic House guys for continuing to support this show, helping us keep the lights on, etc. And also, it's a great place to go to get your fix of independent comics if you love them like we do. If you go to comichouse.com, you can see lots of titles that you can actually get hard copy copies of, and they're updating it all the time. Lots of people more and more creators are signing up to it all the time, which is brilliant. And not only that, I think it's just getting bigger and better all the time, and that's the Comic House app, which is available now, has a huge database of digital independent books.
Including BHP, they're on there.
Rock of the Reds, which we've talked a lot about.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, what else have they got on at the moment?
Our new best friend, John Wagner.
Oh, yeah.
From Marcosi, you got Bayou Arcana, The Boy Who Made Silence, Alpha Gods. Hold on, just press the fucking Atomic Sheep. I was just an internal monologue there. You Vanguard issue 12,
hey.
Issue 13 of Future Quake, Something Wicked, Rebound issue 1, which I'll be talking about later in the show.
Oh, okay.
Oh, blimey, that's there loads.
Yeah. Yeah, blimey, blimey O'Reilly.
Indeed. And in all seriousness, it is a great app. And if you've got your comics on there, then there's a good chance that you'll be getting a few pounds every so often. Because they do what they can to actually get money back to their independent creators.
Unlike other comics apps.
Yeah, where it's going to take you forever to buy a bag of crisps. But but you can get the Comic House app now, and for only £3 a month, you get access to all the comics you want. There's a 14-day free trial just to check it out and see what you think, and it's well, I think when as soon as you check it out, that's it, you'll be sold for life. So go to comichouse.com and find out more about it today. So there you go. That's
very good.
It started off a mess, but finished up good.
Ended a mess.
Just like every week on this show.
Ended like one big happy mess.
Not so soon in the show, Tony. Why
that's good news just come in. The Horde comic anthology just got funded on Kickstarter.
Well done to the Horde boys. We may be talking to them very, very soon. You constantly sound surprised this week, Tony. Why?
Because I can't mute, you see. Normally when I mute, I'm surprised then.
Yeah, so you're going to have to be careful with all your bouts of windy pops that you'll have throughout the show.
I said one thing you guys illustrated to me is my poor selling technique on Vanguard at the table.
Because whenever someone came,
whatever, Dan. Like you,
you said to me whenever someone came up and said, "I'll buy a copy." Like, oh, really? Oh, cool. I was like kind of surprised that had happened. Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
I'm happy with every sale.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are, aren't we?
Yeah.
And Vanguard did very well, rightfully so. You've almost sold out, ain't you, Dan? I always knew you were a sellout.
Well, yeah, it's me doing these ads every week. I'm sort of up in my game selling out. Yeah, I'm really running low on stock. I'm going to have to consider what I'm going to do going forward.
Yeah.
Talking of Comic Cons, I went to one today.
Yeah, so I want to hear about this.
Yeah, get ready for this, folks. Okay.
You're right, Dave, you're right to listen to this.
Go for it. Shit.
I went again this year, the Tonbridge Comic Con. And last year it was a little bit of a side fair. It was the usual sort of celebrity, like real Z-list celebrity, sci-fi celebrities. So they're even lower than sort of low. But there was no kind of Primeval crew there. But anyway, it's held in a leisure centre. And honestly, it's ridiculous. It's just a fucking massive, like, shopping experience. You're paying, like, I think it's 15 quid to get in.
What?
For me and my son to get in. It's like £10 and £5 or something like that. And it's just stall after stall of fucking selling overpriced toys and crap.
Do they have any, like, events or anything? Any, like, panels or anything like that?
Oh, mate. We went to this panel. It was like a Star Wars panel. And I sort of said to him, do you want to listen to this? And he went, okay. And I sat down and there's about four rows of chairs with about five chairs, like the plastic back ones. And the front row was filled up with a couple of people dressed up like Star Wars characters. And they had two guys there who appeared in the film. One was Christopher Patrick Nolan, which if you've seen Rogue One, he's the guy that shuts the door on Darth Vader. And he has like one line. And the other guy was a chap named Alan Harris who played the Borsch or something. He's like one of the bounty hunters out of Empire
Strikes
Back. Is that
like the lizard one?
In like the yellow boiler suit, and he just stands there. And they sort of started asking, like, oh, so Christopher, how did he get another Star Wars film? And basically, he just talked about how he delivered this one line. And after 2 minutes, my son was just fucking dead bored. And there was two guys like practicing fucking lightsaber fighting on the right of us. I was like, I'm fucking dying here. This is the worst. So I went off, and there's a table called the celebrities in inverted commas, and they're just sitting there, and there's no one going up to them. There's just nothing, and it had the only one there I knew of was a chap called Ian McNeil, and he appeared in the recent Doctor Who was Churchill.
Oh, he does them all, didn't he? Do a fridge opening, he would.
Yeah. but like, yeah, before I thought, like, okay, this is what it is. But this year was like, this is the fucking pits. This is awful. It's like, I don't know how much lower this can fucking get. I found one long box of comics in a box of, you know, the 2000 AD reprints with the white graphic novels trades.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I bought Kirstaff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I bought one for a fiver, the Kirstaff run. So I thought, oh, fuck it, I'm going to get something out of this. But it's real sad. I won't be going to that one again. To say.
You sent us a picture of this is the only convention you can buy a Kelly Osbourne action figure.
Yeah,
there's that to be said for it, isn't there?
There was like these kind of a stall with like older kind of action figures. There was the Osbourne's Kelly Osbourne figure, and I thought, what the fuck? Like, this is how old's that? Like 20 years old?
Yeah.
In its box still as well.
Yeah, it's box. There was also a Highlander animated series. I didn't even know there was one. A figure from that. But yeah, there's lots of just the usual kind of Funko Pops. And the other thing is, like, Sun wants an action figure, and they've got these kind of like crates where they're selling like stuff in the 80s for £2. But yeah, if you want to get stuff like for Civil War, they're 20 to 25 quid for like a 7-8 inch action figure. And it's just like, yes. What fucking kid's going to buy this?
When I look at them, the like the paint job and everything isn't really that good on them either. I was in a Forbidden Planet this weekend. I was looking there. I thought, oh, let's have a look at the action figures. Of course, I looked at the prices and thought they were ridiculous. That's why you were talking about it struck a nerve. But then I thought, well, for the price, let's have a look at the sort of the quality of the figures. And a lot of the time, it doesn't really hold up.
No,
if you ask me.
Yeah. Well, I told you that's why I think Funko Pops are so popular, because they're only a tenner.
Yeah.
So they're less than half the price of an action figure, which is smaller than them, you know?
Yeah. I think you're bang on, actually.
Years ago, buying one of those, you know, Todd McFarlane did the Spawn figures, and they did, like, the horror ones.
Yeah.
I think I bought one of them for 15 quid years ago, and that was, like, great, because he had a little kind of, it came with a set or something.
That was at the point where you're like, oh, it's not a toy, it's an action figure. You know, that, when it's that sort of price, you're like, oh, yeah, this isn't a toy. But let's face it, when you see their sort of Avengers figures and stuff, they've got to be toys, aren't they? They're, you know, kids have got to play with. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you used to be able to get those, you know, like you could do the Marvel busts, like the head and shoulders of a Marvel character. Yeah. I've got quite a few of them, and they are only 30 quid.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and they're like an actual ceramic, you know, well-painted thing, you know, compared to action figures.
If you want something that's like, you know, proper high-end, then you get those Hot Toy figures. Those ones, they're about like 250 quid or something like that. But that's,
I'm always a bit suspicious of people who buy the lady ones. You know what I mean?
But say
I think someone needs to follow them home, don't they, those people? Yeah.
Say you had two kids, they wanted an action figure each. That's fucking 40 quid.
Yeah.
And you're getting charged to go into this leisure centre to look around shops. It's bewildering.
If the whole family had gone, that'd have been 30 quid. You know what I mean? You've got two kids and two adults, that's too much.
Yeah.
To go somewhere where you're only going to buy stuff. Yeah. And those Star Wars people are only on the panel to promote the fact they were signing fucking photographs, really.
We had like an interview with Is McAuliffe last week.
Yeah.
And Cardiff Comic Expo is coming up in June the 2nd. A bit of free plug there. And she's got on the door, £6?
But there's stuff there that isn't, you're not just going in to fucking buy action figures or merchandise stuff. I just feel like those events will collapse under their own weight.
OxCon was on today, and that's another shit fest, isn't it? And that was 15 quid to get in, just to go into a marketplace to buy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. 15 all this quid. Stuff you can get it cheaper online if you want to. Yeah. If you want to get that stuff, I'm not knocking anyone who wants to buy that kind of stuff. So, I mean, how you spend your money is up to you. But I just
that's why when you've got a good comic convention or a comic event, cherish it and like show it some love and like spread the word about it.
And we'll be at Cardiff, aren't we?
Yeah.
Looking forward to that.
It's going to be a good day. So Dan, you're in a dark place, aren't you? So this week we're going to cheer you up, and I know. Actually, you've wanted to talk about Cyberpunk for a little bit. I know we've wanted to talk to Dave for a while now, especially with all the excitement abounding for Killtopia.
Yeah.
How awesome that looks. And probably we're going to discuss the BHP news as well. So we thought it'd be a good time to talk about a genre that we've never really discussed before, and that is cyberpunk. And I would it's a genre that I would say off the top of my head, I'm not really versed in, but I know what's going to happen. Everyone's going to discuss comics that I'll be like, oh yeah, I like that one. Oh yeah, I've read that one.
Yeah, I did that. I went through a list of comics that are cyberpunk, and I thought, oh, I didn't realise that was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna run a little test later and run a few titles past you and see if you agree whether they're cyberpunk or not.
I mean, I don't know, Dave. Do you consider? Would you put Killtopia in the cyberpunk genre? Is that what you would say it would be?
It's probably the closest thing you could sort of, if you had to sort of simplify it down into something like that. It's probably a really good starting point. But for me, it was primarily actually Japanese video games that was the major influence, but then the cyberpunk stuff sort of came into it as the idea developed. So it's like, I do like some cyberpunk stuff, but I wouldn't say like I'm a massive expert on it, but there are a few titles I really, really like.
I'm probably the same. Like, cyberpunk isn't necessarily a genre I go to, but there's a lot of visual cues and certainly a lot of influences that you feel all the way through. And like when
there's a lot of manga influences, you know, in the cyberpunk world, aren't there? It's a big genre for them, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
Oh, massively. Yeah. I mean, the easiest ones are sort of Ghost in the Shell, Akira, but beyond that, you've got things like Appleseed and what else have you got? It's actually incredible how much there is. I mean, one of the ones I always sort of go back to with Killtopia is Guyver. Do you remember
that?
We
love the Guyver.
They used to show that on Channel 4 back when I was like probably too young to be watching it. it's crazy. But it's pretty much all of the comics that I write, the main first influence is video games, but then you know, it's like anything, though. You sort of draw your ideas from a multitude of things, and that's why it's good to not be closed off and kind of. I mean, for me, like if I chose, you know, to set out and make a cyberpunk comic, off the bat, like I knew, right, this is what I'm going to do is a cyberpunk comic. It's going to be hard cyberpunk. I wouldn't want to just read cyberpunk to get in the zone for it, you know, because then you're going to make something that's kind of similar to everything else out there, right? So. You sort of pull from all these other influences and you put your own spin on it. And there's loads of stuff going on in Killtopia that I'm sure we'll cover in a bit. But there's so many different influences from across the map, like different genres and mediums and tons of stuff.
Yeah, I think that's the advantage with the genre as well. Like, people could clearly label it as cyberpunk. But for instance, when you read Killtopia and you get to know more of it, there's more layers to it and you realise there's so much more going on than the face value, isn't there?
And for my sins as well, because there's so much to juggle. There's like so many plot strands, and it's a really densely layered like world state, and there's so much going on in it, which makes my job writing future issues, which I'm doing just now, all the more hellish. But it's a fun challenge, right? You know.
Cool.
Yeah, like you said, the cyberpunk kind of comics. There's a number of them, definitely.
I will say that, like, I'm not completely clear on what cyberpunk is.
Well, funny you should mention that, Vincent, because I looked it up.
Oh, nice.
So, what is cyberpunk? It says in my notebook, Bruce Bethker coined the word in his short prose story entitled Cyberpunk, which appeared in an issue of Amazing Science Fiction. Now, can anyone guess the date? Or the rough year? Let's say the year. When did he coin that phrase?
75.
No, that's too early.
Too early.
Yeah.
84.
Good shout. 83. November 83 of Amazing Science Fiction.
Is that post Blade Runner?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. So the phrase wasn't coined till after that. I mean, obviously you've got Philip K. Dick and you've got Blade Runner, you know, you've got Heinlein even, and you know, a lot of these stories which you would see as being and a couple of the stories I'm going to ask you about in a bit, I mean, predate that as well, the comics.
Yeah.
But that, I think that was when, allegedly, according to Wikipedia, you don't believe everything you read on Wikipedia, it was coined. But it is described as combining low life and high tech in a futuristic setting, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
So look at stuff like Johnny Mnemonic and a lot of the Moebius stuff, and even stuff like Tokyo Ghost.
Yeah.
You know, Hard Boiled. I mean, that does that, doesn't it?
God, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Ronin by Frank Miller, that does it as well. Yeah, and so that's got that tech, but it's also got the sort of, you know, street element to it as well, which Blade Runner has, doesn't it? You know?
Yeah.
Well, the one, like the major, like, if I had to pick one comic that was the main influence for Killtopia, it's weird that it's kind of, it's cyberpunk, but not, like, it's such a unique take on it, is Transmetropolitan.
Yeah, that's quoted quite heavily. I would see that as cyberpunk, dude, I've got to tell you. Yeah.
It kind of doesn't have those same tropes, though, like, you know, the dude with the trench coat and the sort of neon and, the, you know, it's sort of raining all the time and it's dark. It's more vibrant and colourful, like what Ellis did with that
book. It's more political as well, I think, you know.
Oh, yeah, massively. It's more punk. I was like a journalism student at university when my flatmate said, hey, you know, you're doing a journalism course, I'd be reading this comic, check it out.
Oh, cool.
And it was just like perfect timing because it just like really spoke to me, you know, that was what I was into, that's the career I wanted, was journalism. And then you've got this like jumped up, drugged up Hunter S. Thompson cipher, you know, running around this fucking batshit crazy like hipster cyberpunk metropolis. It's just the most maddest thing I'd ever read. And
and it was a consistent, it was the old classic Vertigo, wasn't it? Consistent contained run with mostly the same artist, all written by Warren Ellis, mostly drawn by Derek Robinson, wasn't it, Robertson? Really, really good run. I really enjoyed that. Yeah, and you're right, it got you thinking, that series. It really did.
Well, it's interesting because it kind of predated a lot of tech that exists.
Well,
now,
it predates the Matrix, doesn't it? If you look at
it,
the
does,
Matrix,
yeah,
you can see where the Matrix draws from it, you know. Mm.
Oh, for sure. And it kind of, like, it's funny that when, you know, Spider Jerusalem's researching stories, he always sits in his chair and brings up what he called, what the series refers to as feeds. And it's essentially Twitter and YouTube.
Yeah.
And these things weren't going to exist for many years to come. And it was just, like, so, such a revelation that he kind of predicted that. I mean, it's not a big, it's not a wild prediction by any guess, but, you know, it's just looking back at it now, you sort of think, oh, well, he really was like ahead of the curve with it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
There's a lot of cyberpunk fiction that kind of it's almost futurology, is that right? Where you kind of look forward and see what tech's coming down the road. I mean, there's the Neil Donaldson Snow Crash book, and that's got quite a lot of the net on there. It's not quite as 3D as it is in the book, but certainly the stuff about the avatars and kind of hiding behind identities and stuff like that.
And the William Gibson stuff as well, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
All of that stuff, definitely.
It does.
And, I mean, Philip K. Dick, you know, he predates it with the drugs, that, you know, and all this, the identity theft and, you know, all this sort of thing. So predates all that, you know.
Yeah.
That's Scanner Darkly's. That's a crazy book.
Amazing. Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
It's wild, yeah.
Yeah, Ubik and all those books are amazing, yeah.
Someone mentioned Tokyo Ghost earlier. That's
yeah,
one.
Yeah,
that's definitely a go-to. Because I'd say, like, my favorite modern comic is Remender's Low. Love that. And then he brought out Tokyo Ghost. You know, it's just this really tight 10-issue run that just, like, covers so much stuff, like nature versus technology. And
Sean Gordon Murphy goes fucking nuts in it as well. Yeah.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
They did one of those oversized Image books, didn't they? Almost like an artist edition of one issue. With all the sort of, you get a close up on the pencils, and it's so crazily detailed, isn't it?
Yeah,
especially the cityscapes, which, you know, is a sort of cyberpunk trope, but hyper dense, like, artwork is just fantastic. I could read it over and over, definitely.
Yeah. Have you guys read Hard Boiled by Frank Miller and Jeff Darrow ever?
God, yeah, many times.
Yeah,
I love that book. That's incredible. I mean, if I had to say one artist who sums up cyberpunk, I'm going to say either him or Moebius for me.
I'm big fan of Masamune Shiro on the Apple Seed and Ghost in the Shell, but definitely bloody Frank Jeff Darrow.
Yeah,
he's just stuffed on. It's intimidating looking at some of those pages. Yeah. It really is, because it's fucking hell. You haven't skimmed on any detail in this at all.
Yeah. I mean, for me, with that sort of genre, you need an artist with almost a cleanness of line. Or, you know, there's a lot of detail going on. I mean, Sean Gordon Murphy, of course, like, some of it looks hectic and crazy, but he's definitely thought about every line that
you have to show that noodling, don't you? The noodling, you know, you could almost, like, drill into it, the microscope, and there'd still be someone looking out of a window at you, and it's almost like that to me.
And it's something that, you know, you look at one image of Killtopia, certainly, like, you got the one of the main characters just stood on a rooftop with the Kaiju Cola sign, which is just really cool anyway.
But, yeah, stiletto. Yeah. The funny thing is that Craig has never done sequential artwork before. This is his first internal comic. Really? He was more of a covers guy. And his 9-to-5 job, he is actually a contractor. You know, he does like design work for companies and products and that kind of thing. Yeah. So he started out doing the covers for Bust, our first series. Then it was pretty much a given we wanted to work together because he's like a super lovely guy, super professional. But we haven't revealed much more of the internal art yet since the Kickstarter, but the level of detail in it is simply, it's just incredible. Yeah. Like, it's that same level of detail where you could look at it on a different day and see different things. Yeah. Like, legitimately, like, especially the picture of Shinji on the rooftops with the bat. There's all these little adverts in the background and little things that you really need to sort of zoom in on, and it's just like such a level of Jeff Darrow, Mobius, and Frank Quietly are the sort of three that Craig always references as like his main influences as well, so you guys are spot on with that. That's basically where he's kind of drawn all that from.
Quietly takes a lot of that dynamic sort of cyberpunk stuff and puts it into superhero comics for me. I don't know.
Yeah.
Does that sound like a realistic thing to say? Because when you look at stuff like he did, like The Authority and stuff like that, The Authority and Stormwatch are almost like cyberpunk superheroes in a way, aren't they?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. There's a massive, like, the tech with the carrier. Is that the name of the ship? It's kind of...
And is it Hawksmoor, who's like a city... He's like Tarzan, but a city dweller, and his feet have got...
I'm thinking of the one that's got like he's got like tread on the bottom of his feet.
On his feet.
Frank Quietly drew that character amazingly.
Yeah, that's a great character. I love that character. Really.
One of the things you brought up, Dave, is one of the things about cyberpunk is obviously the city settings, but just logos and brands everywhere. That's usually quite synonymous, and kind of coming up with logos after brands for all these kind of fictitious corporations. That's a job in itself. Do you know what I mean?
Definitely. Craig's actually come up with some really cool ones, though. He's kind of done, like spins on things that exist in our world. So, for example, Apple exists in our world, but instead it's called Eden. So it's like Apple of Eden and that kind of thing. And instead of eBay, we've got PayBay. like, which is PayPal and eBay. So we've just kind of like looked at what exists now and just done a little spin on it. So like people still get what it is and what we're riffing on, but like it's something different because we don't want to get sued, obviously.
But sometimes you need to have those visual shortcuts, because if you made up any kind of name for, you know, a service, just say like a PayPal service, if you made up anything, as a reader, they're not going to have any idea what you're talking about, and you'll have to explain it to them. But if you can do something that merges something visually without obviously getting yourself in legal problems, but immediately says that if someone can see it and go, I know exactly what that is, then that makes your work so much easier.
Everything's about visual shortcuts in comics, isn't it? That's what it's about.
The same with writing. There was I can't remember what authors what screenwriter said, it might have been Nolan, that basically if you tap into sort of like all these old mythologies and sort of nod at them and bring them into your story, it seems to add a real depth and weight that you don't have to work very hard to kind of build up. And I guess the same with like the cyberpunk stuff, like having the nods and the winks at PayPal and eBay, that you bring in so much into it, as you said, that the reader knows just by that.
Yes, there's an iconography as well. You can almost visually simulate a sign, can't you? And it'll translate in the brain to something else, you know. Yeah,
and that's the thing, is that it's all in service of, and I think this is a big cyberpunk thing as well, is that the city itself needs to be like, it needs to feel like a character as well. Like, it actually needs to feel a place that's lived in and has like a, you know, we've invented some slang for this. It's not like so far removed that you won't understand it, but it's kind of like different slang for things. And Kiltopia basically is all leading up to a big like blood sport like tournament. It starts 3 months before this big Bloodsport tournament where all the bounty hunters will face off against each other. So we always have the action not interrupted, but it sort of segues through like news broadcasts. Like, And we have we invented like a presenter who kind of talks in slang and is like, yo, what's up? You know, we're here with another Wreckfest update. You know, here's like what's going on in the world of like the bounty hunters and all this kind of stuff. And we've made fake adverts on TV. Some of them are pretty brutal.
Were you in some ways influenced by some like sort of classic like Paul Verhoeven kind of RoboCop style?
Dark Knight does that, doesn't it? You know, even Dark Knight Returns does that sort of thing.
I mean, RoboCop is definitely like legitimately one of the like influences for all that kind of stuff. Like, I wouldn't call myself good at writing satire. Like, at least I don't know if I am or not, because I don't have that much of an ego about my writing. But I've never done comedy before, right? This is the first book that I've actually thought, right, it's going to be a dark comedy. So I actually really had to like start watching sort of dark comedies, reading more comedy like comics. We've tried to like make like these crazy adverts where essentially like the populations become kind of numbed, you know, by technology and stuff. So one of the adverts that we'll have in a future issue is do you remember Chat Roulette?
Yeah.
So this is what's the name for the next?
Don't
lie, Tammy. It's medical ailment chat roulette. So you basically hook up with someone. So basically you hook up with someone, you get paired with someone, then you spin a roulette wheel, and then basically you through your VR headset you feel like a horrible injury to sort of spark like little bit of humanity into you. And I think I'm not quite sure what we're going to make this guy have, but I think we're erring towards like a broken spine or something. And then off camera you just hear him like screaming in pain and, oh my god, kill me, take it off.
It's a bit like a metaphor for the fact that the internet is sucking all of character, personality and life out of us as we go along, isn't it?
In the 80s, when obviously the cyberpunk came around, it was the big fear that these mega corporations were going to be sort of taking over that, and I think we were presumed, I don't know, as a society kind of moved away from that, but if anything that's come to pass.
Yeah,
completely. I mean, if you spoke to someone in the 1980s, like a sci-fi writer, and said in the year 2017, the majority of households are going to have like microphones in their house linked up to commercial entities, they were like, that's a nightmare. But
or you would have something like Facebook selling all our details to Cambridge, you know,
Analytica.
We live in a society where like revolution has been branded. That's quite a good line.
That's a whole novel there. He's going to start writing that now.
But you know, people sell their products on being a different from the norm, or like, yeah, we're the alternative, when they're just as bad as anyone else. Do you know what I mean?
I legitimately saw this week, right? Do you know Monster, the energy drink, right? Disgusting fucking So they've brought out a new one which is called like Rebellion or something. I saw this on Facebook, and basically there's a big blurb on the back that says, "Yeah, we're using like natural ingredients because we're going to stick it to the man, and you know we don't want to be like those big corporations."
Oh, I think I saw this. Yeah.
And
then
next to it, it's like the Wikipedia page for Monster, and it's owned by the Coca-Cola Corporation. Yeah. So it's like, do you know what I mean? It's bullshit. Yeah. The whole thing.
You are being conned. Yeah, that's the whole answer, isn't it? You are being conned. Yeah. They keep telling us that. They've been telling us that since the late 60s. We've never believed it, have we?
No,
we're totally fucked now, aren't we?
Yeah.
I liked those pictures of the bloke of Zuckerberg where somebody photoshopped him as Data.
Data.
To be fair, Data's a slightly more human.
Yeah.
At least he strives to be human. You know what I mean?
So, I mean,
but that's at the centre of all cyberpunk, though, isn't it? That paranoia against the man. That's what's got to be there. I mean, beyond the sort of technical and the apocalyptical, and it's the fact that there's a few people who realise that we are being totally fucked.
Yeah,
you know, you look at something like Soylent Green's the same. You know, even you go back far enough, you know, it's all like that, isn't it?
In that regard, though, like Killtopia, the main sort of rebellious streak is actually the whole thing's about the healthcare system.
Right.
Okay. It hasn't really come out in the previews yet, but I think once people read the first issue, it's actually all about healthcare inequality in the future. Obviously, like the premise is that, you know, Japan's been taken over by these killer robots. Nobody knows where they come from, but they kind of stay in this one sector of the city, which is Sector K, which has now been branded Killtopia. It's been gamified as a blood sport kind of thing. You know, people saw a chance to get rich off of it, but so it's been terraformed basically. And when the robots terraform, it releases nanobots into the atmosphere. And millions of people in this really dense city have now contracted a disease called the rot. which is basically their insides are being terraformed as fast as they can heal. So it sounds fucking painful in our thing. But Shinji, the main character, is basically dirt poor. He's immune to it. Some people are. But his sister has it really bad, and he's basically like, they live way down on the bottom layers of the city, so basically no one wants to hire, you know, a street rat basically into a decent paying job. So that's why he, in a sort of Breaking Bad kind of thing, that's why he hunts robots without a permit, and he's built his own technology to basically wreck robots, you know, sell the salvage, and then buy injections for his sister. So basically he's doing it to keep her alive. So the whole healthcare thing runs all the way through the arc. So that's kind of the sort of, and then, you know, we see like riots and protests and things like that in the first issue, and just how like fed up people have become, you know, being constantly medicated. And yeah, it's kind of,
any particular reason for that healthcare slant to it,
dude? I basically just needed like some reason for Shinji to want to keep on doing this, that but basically he keeps this from his sister. She thinks that he does like legitimate work, but he's like, you know, sneaking out through the sewer systems to get into Kiltopia to like kill things. It was also just like the NHS being dismantled was such a big thing. Obamacare was such a big thing a few years ago, and it still is, of course. So I just thought, I need that one thing that kind of gives him a really big motivation, you know.
Which is always always the heart of great sci-fi, really, isn't it? There's always sort of one idea or implement which will force everything going forward. As soon as you've got that, then everything sort of builds and merges around it. I mean, as soon as you had that, the characters changed and evolved, I'm sure, you know.
For sure. And it also just makes for a really volatile world state as well, because like there is like elements of resistance building, and basically, like I said, it's all going to lead up to this, you know, no spoilers, but it's going to lead up to this final the 10th anniversary of this blood sport called Wreckfest, which is when it's basically Battle Royale in Kiltopia. So they're hunting the mechs and they're hunting each other for the top prize. But there's a resistance building, and there's all lots of activism, and people are really getting fed up with this blood sport because a lot of money gets spent on it every year. You know, that money could be better used. I mean, it's like a sort of mirror of our government now in the UK, right? They're spending money on, you know, bombing foreign countries with no real agenda. Why not use that money and put it back into healthcare or give people houses? You know, that it's something that, while this world is so strange and futuristic and very weird, I mean, there's a lot of strange fads and fetishes and things that we've invented for the first issue. It's still relatable, like that political bit and the healthcare bit is universal, and everyone's going to resonate with that. So I think that's why we tried to get that to anchor everything in our world, I suppose. Hopefully it worked out.
It's nice. I was watching, it was on the other night, Elysium.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen that? Yeah. That's the ending to that one's really kind of, it's not bittersweet, but if people haven't seen it, Elysium, essentially there's like a kind of an orbital space platform where all the rich people live, and all the rest of the people on the Earth are dirt poor, and like Kiltopia, they've got no healthcare. And at the end, they manage to get aboard Elysium and make it so all the robots have to care for everyone else on Earth. But like the healthcare system they set up won't help everyone. It can't help everyone. There's not the resources to it. So I kind of have to look into that, but I'm not sure if that was directly done on purpose by the author or the director, because
I'd like to think it is, because you know, as much as we see people protesting, there's no easy solution, is it?
No, that's what I kind of like feel like. Is that what that film's trying to address?
Interesting. Yeah, I tried to sit through that, and I made it. Is that the Matt Damon thing?
That is. Yeah.
I found it a bit hard going.
It doesn't live up to the great premise that it provided. I think for me.
Right. I get you.
I think it starts really strong, but then kind of loses its way a little down the line.
Yeah,
I was going to mention another cyberpunk comic, which I guess you'd sort of jump to, is Judge Dredd.
Oh, that was what I was going to ask later. Yeah, it's almost
retroactively cyberpunk.
There's so much stuff in that they've sort of seen coming down the road, and maybe they didn't even see it, but they just saw. This is what one of the things I was reading today. It's a little highbrow, but the World Bank released a report that said that basically the only way they're going to stop all these big corporations going fully automized with sort of robots doing all the jobs is to make harsher new laws for current employees, which include no minimum wage, the ability to sack people for any reason. You don't need a reason to do it. And just absolutely like draconian methods, because they said that's the only way you're going to provide an alternative for people, for machines not to be replacing them. But then that rolls around to the Judge Dredd thing, where the population have nothing to do. There's no work because it's all automated. Yeah, so yeah. It's like the devil finds work for idle hands. That's why there's so much bloody crime. And
yeah.
It's a genuine, like, worrying thing. Like, yeah, have you guys seen that Channel 4 series Humans about the robots?
Yeah. Oh, I like that series. That's a good series.
Yeah, because there's a lot of that in there about the automation. Like, I think it's like their daughter, like, I think at one point the mum says to the daughter, oh, you need to do your studies and stuff. And she's like, well, what's the point? Because there'll be no jobs by the time I leave school. I mean, there's nothing to do. So,
you know.
And this is genuinely quite a scary world state when you think about it, you know?
Yeah.
And especially the bit where they get it on with a sexy robot. That's one of the main reasons.
That's what we tuned in for.
Yeah, we come for the sort of the technological intrigue, but we stay for the robots getting. Yeah,
we stay for the robot boning.
So this point, every TV series now starts with, like, it's got to have violence and sex in the first episode, and even if the rest of the series is not like that at all, the first episode is always like that. Yeah. Especially on Netflix, it's ridiculous.
I know, Place Call's not been the same, is it?
I know. You know what I mean? But... And I tell you what, the Magic Roundabout is fucked up.
That's always been dirt. Did you hear the story about the Magic Roundabout? It's when they bought it, I don't know, from Sweden or Finland or something like that. They bought it, but the BBC didn't pay for any of the scripts. Yeah. And so they refused to send them the scripts. So some geezer, I think it was, I can't remember, someone fairly famous, he sat there and just made up the stories while he watched it. That's cool, isn't it?
Oh, right.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. That's quite cyberpunky, isn't it?
Yeah.
Pretty punk. We've got this massive automation that kind of controls their life, and they live around it, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of them's pretty much a cyborg with a spring for a body.
Yeah. That's some kind of metaphor, isn't it?
Yeah. For what, Tony?
I don't know. So I'll do our quiz. Come on, I'm dying.
Yeah,
to do our
go
quiz.
For it. Go right, for it.
Okay, I'm going to name some comics, and I want you to tell me whether you think that they are cyberpunk or not.
Okay.
Is this a quiz or just finding out?
Well,
an opinion?
It's sort of an opinion thing, isn't it? An opinion piece.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Right. What's your favourite quiz show on TV? Is it QI? Yes. Let's think of it as QI.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Is Transformers cyberpunk?
No.
Not even now.
No, especially not now.
You don't think so?
No.
Okay.
Oh, I was thinking of the films. Yeah, go on. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the films as well. I'm not sure. I don't, because I haven't seen them, so I don't know. Yeah. Here's one. I actually think came out of the little bit of cyberpunk that came about. I think Marvel 2099.
Oh yeah, good.
That's
got
some. Yeah, that's got some elements to it, hasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially the Punisher one. Yeah. Oh, and Spider-Man. Yeah.
Yeah, and Ravage.
I never read Ravage, I have to say.
No. He had a dustbin lorry, didn't he? He was a sort of warrior with a dustbin lorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, fighting the man. Yeah. Punisher said, then Doom 2099 did. And coincidentally, that was also, I think the summer Doom 2099 was written by Warren Ellis, wasn't it?
Okay.
Yeah. So that's a sort of interesting parallel. Yeah. So, okay, we're going to go yes on that one.
Yeah.
American Flag.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, I think so.
That's got the whole future thing going on. It's got the Talking Heads TV shows.
Yeah, it's got the cybernetic cat, isn't it? With the sort of hands and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. Okay, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And then the last one, which only occurred to me earlier, was Batman Beyond.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's set in a cyberpunk-style city.
Yeah.
And he's got a robot suit and there's gangs of punks.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. I think so. Yeah, there you go. Oh, and let's throw another one in. The Surrogates. Do you remember that comic?
Yeah.
It was a movie with Bruce Willis in as well.
Yeah.
I say that would be, because you've got the whole mind, Avatar kind of thing going on.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
The sort of rich people can afford the sort of avatars and all that sort of thing. And
It feels more cyberpunky in the way that, like, when I hear that term, I always think of novels rather than like comics and stuff. I always think that cyberpunk is almost more of a prose genre. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And those that,
or manga to me as well. Yeah. I always think of manga more, you know.
Yeah. But yeah, if I think about it, I'm surprised at how many books like that we've talked about already tonight that I'm like, that could be part of the genre.
I've got a few other ones that I think are, that we'll all probably agree on, that I wrote down. The Private Eye by Brian K. Vaughan, Marcus Martin.
Yeah.
Anyone read that?
Yeah.
I think that is.
Yeah.
What else? East of West.
We put a shout out on the Twitter.
Oh, did we? Oh, okay.
And we said, what are your favourite examples of good cyberpunk in comics? I put that out because I thought I couldn't think of any. And at Ludologist 2014, he said The Private Eye.
Oh, okay, cool.
We Emporium Purgatorio, who listens to the show.
Oh,
he said The Incal.
Oh, definitely.
God, yeah.
Mebius is the quintessential one for me. Yeah, you know.
Yeah. Tom Curry at this Chugglehead, he said, and of course the Meta Barons.
Yep. Definitely. Yeah. And I'd put The Long Tomorrow, which is Dan O'Bannon and Mebius as well, into that.
I'd say maybe the Meta Barons strays more towards sci-fi, but it's certainly
hard sci-fi.
More. It's got some stuff in there, I would say.
Here's one that I know Dan's well versed in, from Mark Penman, MD Penman. He said he's a big fan of this webcomic, Drugs and Wires.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. That's a fantastic webcomic. Yeah, that's really kind of right up there.
Yeah.
There was
Go on, mate.
I put aside a webcomic to read through, but it's massive. It's another sort of like Appleseed style webcomic that just looked great, but I didn't get a chance to read it before this show. I've been saving it for this show for fucking weeks. But. The week that it's been, I didn't get a chance to read it. So there you go.
Here's one, Kabuki by David Mack. Assassin in near future Tokyo.
I'm not too familiar with that.
I know the one you're talking about. That's, because she's got like a painted face, hasn't she?
Yeah, really sort of watercolory, beautiful stuff.
That came around at a similar sort of time when we had the bad girl movement of like She and Lady Death and stuff, I think.
But it's so much better. But, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was not really the TNA.
Yeah, it was lumped in.
I think you're right. It appeared at the same time.
Appeared at the same time, so therefore it was lumped in with a lot of similar artwork in like Wizard and stuff, but it's definitely.
But it's much more sort of sensitive, I think, than that. Yeah, definitely. Here's one that I don't know if you remember it, guys, but Shatter. Which was First Comics. You remember that? It ran between 85 and 88, and it was Peter B. Gillis and Mike Sains, and it was the first comic to be drawn all digitally. It looks like one of those ones where you'd go to return, ink spot, go to return, black spot, white spot, black spot. It's like that, you know? So it's sort of, it's just pixelated sort of thing. Anyone seen that?
No, I've not seen that one. There was a Batman one that came out in the 80s that was made entirely out of computer graphics.
Yes, very like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just couldn't get on with it. I don't know what it is. Like, I have a hard time with the poser comics. I can't. They seem absolutely lifeless. Being too down on them, it's just not my cup of tea.
I'm the same. Sort of like.
There's an interesting one actually. Have you guys heard of Metal Made Flesh?
That's indie comic, isn't it? It's more of a
I don't even know how to describe it. It's like a visual novel, so it's actually written like a novel. It's actually just pages of just text, but then you get sort of attached and unattached images of, you know, people with lots of augments and you know, cityscapes, kind of a Mobius kind of art style. Where it's really just you get a few pages of prose and then you get a few images, and then so it's really not like sequential. It's just kind of the closest thing I can compare it to is Kill or Be Killed. You know, the Brubaker.
Yeah, okay, it's like that. Yeah,
how he's got the text down the side, then images, which the text is never actually over some of the panels. I don't know if you remember that, where it's like you'd have like a strip of white down the left with all the sort of dialogue, and on the right of the page it would just be art.
All right. Okay.
It's kind of like that, but on each page. It's really hard to describe, but it's really good one to check out because
they're very popular, aren't they? They usually kill it on Kickstarter and stuff, don't they?
Yeah,
those guys. Yeah. I can't remember the guy's name. Is it
Jeremy Biggs?
That's him. Yeah. That's him.
Would you? I'm not sure if I consider Martial Law to be cyberpunk. It doesn't.
Yeah, there's certainly elements there, aren't there? I mean, if Dread is, then that is, isn't it? You know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, that one. Because
does anyone remember Rank Xerox, which ran in heavy metal?
Yeah. There's a shitload of cyberpunk in heavy metal.
Yeah.
Though.
Yeah. And anything by Bilal. I know he's done quite a lot of stuff, hasn't he? The Nicopol trilogy in Future Paris. That's the sort of Bond dessiné sort of cyberpunk. I would say.
I don't know if we've mentioned this. Has anyone said Akira?
No. Yes, we mentioned that earlier.
Yeah. Oh, we did.
We did.
Yeah. But that's good. Yeah.
I mean, certainly. I mean, I'm looking at the Kiltopia image of the character with the baseball bat, and I can. It springs to mind Akira to me, you know, that. So I think it's probably like skyscrapers in the background and things like that. And I will say, I haven't read any of the Akira graphic novels, which is a massive. I think
have you not, man? Oh, okay,
no, well, that's good. That's a massive sort of blank spot on that, because I think everyone has, haven't they? Am I?
Everyone's at least started. Really, I think everyone started it, haven't they?
I've not got to the entire run.
Yeah.
It's like because the series was still going when the film was made, so they actually there's a lot more story than after the film stops, and they sort of dig into the world a lot more, and it's such an epic story. But that image of Shinji with the baseball bat is a homage to the Akira poster when he's holding the rifle in front of the city.
Oh, nice.
Yes, I can see that now. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and if you're Frank Quietly, you have 5 Akira volumes that you put and you sleep on top of. Did anyone see that BBC documentary on him?
No.
And he said, oh, sometimes when I can't be bothered to go home, I'll sleep in the studio and I use Akira. At least 5 volumes of Akira as my pillow.
Just absorbing their essence.
One of it is this kind of the storytelling, not so much cyberpunk, but there's like lots of panels where it's just the environment and stuff going on, no text. And I find that kind of really hard to do myself, because you're like, oh, fucking hell, something's got to be happening, something's got to be going on. Yeah. But
you almost feel like you've got to have that image from The Fifth Element of all the buildings and everything going on between them and all the millions of people scurrying about. And, you know, that comes from stuff like Blade Runner and stuff like that, doesn't it? You almost got to have that busy, busy scene setter, haven't you?
But I feel like Blade Runner had a bigger cultural impact in certain ways in the East. And then they come up with all their stuff, and then that came back to us, like Akira and Appleseed and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because they got heavily into the kind of... I mean, it wasn't that beat Takashi actor. He was in Johnny Mnemonic.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. Yes, yeah, I love him. Yeah, he's amazing. Yeah.
Isn't he? Yeah. He's in a more recent one as well.
He was in Ghost in the Shell as well.
Oh, yeah, he's in Ghost in the Shell, of course. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I love him. I think he's amazing. I watch everything he's in.
Yeah,
Hannah B and all this sort of Violent Cop. He's amazing.
Violent Cop's great.
Oh, so good.
That's great. Yeah.
There was a kind of twist. Zatoichi as well.
The twist in Violent Cop didn't took me completely by surprise. I think I was quite new to the kind of Taxi Driver, all that kind of stuff when it first came out, the age I was at, and I was like, wow, that was really.
I haven't seen it.
Watch it, it's great. It's really good.
I could feel us getting to a spoiler.
Yeah. It's like moments like they have in other things where characters are kind of interacting and they don't say anything for like a full 2 minutes, and they're just sitting in each other's company and you're kind of watching that on screen. So it's kind of, it can be very slow and but it's good. It's a different experience. So check that one out, Vince.
I definitely will. I mean, you had me at
that,
Violent Cop.
That makes me want to watch Ghost in the Shell now. I had no reason whatsoever to watch it, but I shall watch it now.
I think if nothing else, that is going to, it's going to look beautiful, that film. I know it got a lot of criticism for this, that, and the other.
I told you guys I watched The Valerian the other day. I know some people liked it. I couldn't cope with it. I'm not the video game generation. It was just too much.
They could shave 30 to 40 minutes out the middle of that film. It would be a better film, if you ask me.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Look, parts of it look amazing.
Yeah.
And they look like they're off a Mebius page or whatever. But it just, it was too, there was a bit where he's running and bashing between walls.
Oh, I love that just, bit. I absolutely adore that bit.
Oh, that's where I turned
Tony
it off.
Didn't like it. No. That's on Netflix. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's Netflix. Anyway, so when it comes to cyberpunk, obviously I think the key ingredient is to build a world. You know, you have to have a world and a confidence in that world and know the details of it, you know, even if they're face value details sometimes. But you know, so with Killtopia, when you created that, do you have like a Killtopia Bible, as it were, of stuff that people will never know, but you only, you know, you know that there's a story behind everything?
Oh, tons. And I get really hung up on the stuff that people will never see. It's like, oh, someone's done this. And it's like, oh, but logically in the rules of this world, they might not do that. And Craig's like, well, do you need to show that? Or like, can you just have them do that? And then trust in the reader to understand why they did it. Or I'm like, I don't know. I sort of go around in circles. And but no, I do have like, I actually put it together for pitch documents. So it's like, you know, a world state kind of like, here's the world, here's where it's at, here's like the kind of the healthcare thing I mentioned, the disease, all that sort of stuff, the rules of like Wreckfest and all that sort of thing. So yeah, I mean, it needs to be quite like, I mean, you don't want anything that's going to break the logic of the world. And I think having a lore Bible like that is key to that. You don't want suddenly people, you know, this is an extreme example, it would never happen of course, but you don't want people suddenly firing magic at each other for that kind of thing. And I think Craig's quite good at keeping me in check as well, because I'm really bad for like getting a draft done and scrapping it and starting over again. It's kind of in the name of refinement though, like but getting hung up on micro details that probably no one's even going to care, but because I know the rules of the world, right? You know, I'm sure we've all been there for that kind of thing, right? But sometimes you know, Craig does say, you know, just let go, mate, just finish the draft, finish it please. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that iteration is good, and just trying to play by your own rules, you know. If you set this sort of world state and you set this technology, you know, try and adhere to it, it will only make it stronger in the end, right? And that's the thing, you know, you see it in films and you see it in like comics and video games and stuff where world rules get broken a lot and it just takes you out of it so bad, you know?
Yeah. It does kind of, if you kind of can derail the story by saying, well, why doesn't the character just do this? And it's really obvious. You've really fucked up.
Totally. I just need to get better at just catching those things, which is fine, but not getting too hung up on the micro little details that only I know about.
What came first? I mean, here's a chicken and egg question. Which came first, the story concept or the world concept?
I'd say it was the world concept, actually, yeah, because I'm a big fan of like Japanese action video games, you know. You're talking things like Bayonetta, Vanquish, Binary Domain, Metal Gear Revengeance, Nier Automata, that kind of thing. So I knew I wanted to do something in tribute to that, and I thought, okay, so what do all those games have in common? They've got larger than life personalities, they've got cool technology, cool weapons, just over the, you know, hyper violence, all that kind of thing. So I just started to think, really, what kind of world would I do in that? Have you guys heard of a game called No More Heroes?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a sort of but I'd say it's kind of niche, but that is about basically an otaku, like a geek, who wins like a lightsaber in like a eBay auction and then kills a local hitman and suddenly finds himself thrust into this like league table of assassins where every assassin in the world can kill him to go up a rank. So he has to just start killing assassins, you know, to try and get up this league table. And I thought, that's an interesting idea. How about, you know, taking that to like the next level and making it like a city-wide thing? And, you know, and it's just like, that was a big driver. But yeah, definitely the world state came first. I wanted to come up with something like that. And the name Queen came quite early, actually. I thought, what's kind of brash, you know, if I was making like an action video game, it would be dystopia, thing about killing, you know, Killtopia. It kind of just came like that, you know, just one of those you know, you're trying to sleep at like 1 a.m. and it just comes to you and all of a sudden you have to get back up again and start writing.
It immediately sells itself, doesn't it? That title alone, well, people will sit up and take notice, don't they?
That's it. And you know, I just think all the comics that I've written, I really want the world to feel tangible, so I just thought it tends to be that is what comes first. I'd say video games are always the primary influence. You know, I sort of like, if I'm playing a lot of cool stuff, you know, I'm maybe going back to some retro games and just sort of getting some ideas from that. And it's just about correlation. I'm sure a lot of comic writers have this. They see some common threads and things and you think, oh, you know, here's something interesting, let's try and, you know, put a spin on it. You know, what if we did this, or we tried this, you know, far out idea on top of it. And yeah, it just came together like that. And then the characters came, and then the world state with the healthcare issue came, and just yeah, it just, you know, I started coming up with the idea maybe late 2015, but because I had other comics planned and, you know, I don't want to burn out, you know, it took a long time to get to it. But yeah, it's just come together really nicely, and we're sort of, I'm close to the end of finishing issue two now, so the script, so it's really sort of coming along now. And yeah, nice. Just awesome. we'll see what happens.
So, I was going to say, the Kickstarter, you absolutely played a blinder on that one. It did really well.
Oh yeah, definitely. So my 9 to 5 is in digital marketing, right? So I currently work for a bank. So you can imagine it's a living hell every day, where nothing creative ever happens. But do you know what? Like, it's actually, you know, I know a lot of stuff about paid Facebook, and you know, I used to be a game journalist back in the day as well. That was my 9 to 5 for a few years, and I actually interviewed a lot of game developers who were on Kickstarter when it was quite a fledgling service. So I've interviewed developers whose Kickstarter failed, ones which were a massive success. So started to get a feel for how the platform worked, and the kind of things, the do's and don'ts, all that sort of stuff, you know. So all that stuff, the marketing experience, all that, literally a year before the Kickstarter launched, we were starting to think, right, how are we going to market this? What's our like marketing strategy going to be? And we actually had a document with all these post ideas and like cool things we could do, and you know, cool rewards we could offer. And I think it was a year before the Kickstarter launched, pretty much, that we revealed the logo with very little context. It was just, this is our next comic. Literally no more information. It's going to be coming out in 2018. Here it is. You know, you'll find out more soon. And we really slowly drip fed it to the point, I think, people got really intrigued by what it was. And I think it helped having like things like cultural references to sort of help people frame it in their mind, like, oh, it's inspired by Japanese video games, such as these ones. It's also inspired by cyberpunk films like Blade Runner, and Asian cinema like Battle Royale and stuff like that. So when people start to think, oh yeah, you really like Blade Runner, oh, maybe I'll check out the comic, it's just having something to sort of latch onto.
Okay.
You know, okay, just like, yeah, cultural, yeah, touch points, you know. And it's not to say, like, you know, we actually had one guy saying, oh, why'd you keep on saying it's like Blade Runner? You know, you can't honestly expect us to believe that it's better than Blade Runner. I said, I didn't say that. I just said it's kind of like Blade Runner, you know. Yeah. So I think one of the biggest things when you're marketing your comic, though, is you need to be really truthful about your influences, because I've read comics before that I got from Kickstarter saying, oh, it's like this and that, you know, everything under the sun. And then you get it and you're like, this is nothing like those things.
Yeah, yeah.
You just said that to like get my money. So I think, and people will remember that stuff, you know. The whole key with Kickstarter, I'm sure you guys will know this from, you know, experience and whatnot, is just, you have to be so transparent and so honest, because you have a direct line to your fan base.
Yeah.
And in a world now where, you know, Facebook algorithms make it hard for posts to stand out, and there's so much noise and competition online, having that direct line to your backers is so important. It's a gift, basically, right?
And if you fuck it up, it's straight on you, isn't it?
Yeah.
You
know what I mean? Massively.
And with Kickstarters as well, obviously, there's a lot of people who will have a successful issue one, but when people come back to issue two, you want a lot of the people who have got that issue one to come back again. So if you mess it up first time, you know, a lot of second issue Kickstarters don't make their goal, you know, because they've made these mistakes.
There was that one I shared with you from last year, that was it, Blood or something. It was kind of highly publicized title, made loads of money over the goal, and then there's loads of people every day saying, where's this, where's that, and the comic's been listed in Diamond. It's like, well, if you've got enough copies to send out to retailers, why haven't you given it to the people who've paid money for it already? Yeah. And
did they not ship a single copy to backers?
I think they have sent some. Like, they sent out over half, or they've fulfilled 2/3 of the order. But when your thing's kind of completed in November, and you're kind of, we're coming up to May, and you haven't got it out.
And, well, you've only got to look at something like, is it Anathema, the Rachel Deering comic? That shipped, that was, they've funded issues 2 to 6, like well over the funding, like did really well. They've printed the first three of that, so they still owe 3 comics. It's been sold, it's been listed in Diamond, it's been sold to Titan, you know, everyone's waiting for the next few issues, and she's just deleted her profile on there.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Yeah, it just says Rachel Deering brackets deleted.
So is there something in the kind of Kickstarter terms and conditions that basically if that doesn't come to fruition, you're not getting your money?
They say it's your the responsibility is on you, basically. They basically say that it is a risk, and you know, and I've seen this with games a lot, you know, companies fold and then they just
I hear it's
finish.
Worse for games,
There's a couple of videos on YouTube. I can't remember the name. The chap who runs the YouTube channel is called Larry Bundy, and he does great reviews on games of the past and controversies and stuff. And they do Kickstarter videos where they've totally fucked up. And a lot of them, they totally overestimate how much money or how much it's going to take to get done. And they do a budget and they burn it out in the first couple of months. And it's like, oh, fucking hell, there's tons of stuff to do. So, trying to just start a game up, I wouldn't even know where to begin. I'd probably go to Jay Gunn and ask him.
He's the expert.
Yeah, literally.
So obviously the Kickstarter was like wildly successful. And then how did the BHP relationship come about?
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So I pitched my previous series to those guys, Vessels. And they rejected it just on the grounds that they don't do fantasy, but they gave me like loads of cool advice, and I think they could sort of see like that. I think they wanted to work with us. So basically, they actually approached us about Killtopia, and it's an interesting one because like we funded the whole production ourselves. Mm. It's not like, you know, they've invested money in it. There's no advance up front. It really is like you've made this thing. We'll help you get on Diamond. We'll help you get into cons you've never done before. We'll do all your sort of like marketing. You know, I'll need to do, obviously I need to market it as well, of course, but they will sort of help me with that. So it's a weird one because I don't think that's ever happened with that publisher. So it's basically just like they said to us, like, we'll take a punt on it. You know, we're not paying you anything, you're not paying us anything, you have 100% of the rights, all that kind of thing. So you know, let's just see what happens, let's see if we can make it work, kind of thing. So it's kind of like no risk, we're gonna take a punt on it, and they just met us and had a few chats with us, and I think they were just so I think they do a lot of stuff that's politically charged as well. They recently put out a book about the suffragettes, and one about the women of science. So it's like these influential women who have had an impact on science, that kind of thing. I think there's some other I think they've got some other sort of political books in the works. So when we started talking about the healthcare angle, they were like, yep, cool, that's like exactly the kind of thing we want to do. We know those guys as well. I mean, it's not like a mates rates kind of thing, you know, they could have said no, but they run like Glasgow Comic Con and a few other cons and stuff as well, so we just got to know them through that. And
because I got an email from them the other day, because obviously I did the interview for Rock of the Reds and stuff, and I got an email. They're working with Frank Quitely on something at the moment as well, I think, aren't they?
He did have an exhibition on. I don't know if it's still running, but in Glasgow he had a big exhibition of all of his art, and it was massively successful as well.
I think they're doing something on that. I think they're doing like a sketchbook type thing, or
the publicity through. Yeah, companion kind of guy, kind of thing.
He's done a cover for Frank Wiley's done a cover for
The Edge Off. Yeah,
that's
The
it.
Edge Off. That's the one I've ordered. Yeah. Not that Mr. Laurie's isn't brilliant, but yeah.
It's weird, the kind of small press has done a couple of times now. I mean, you've done it yourself with Killtopia. I mean, you've got Derek Robertson.
He's got a print view, isn't he?
He did, yeah. And that was like, I'm not sugarcoating this at all or making this up, but when I was on the email to him, basically, it was actually Rob Jones that introduced us. And I was like emailing Derek, and then he came back and said yes. I was like, I don't get emotional easy, but I was like sitting there properly choking up a little bit, like, holy shit, this is like one of the two guys, you know, that made my all-time favorite comic series, and without reading Transmet, I might not have got into comics.
Yeah.
So I was like, this is actually happening now. This is crazy. We also got Casper Wynyard as well.
Fantastic.
Craig's friends with his brother. And I'm a massive fan of Limbo. Love Limbo so much.
His work,
he's doing really well on The Shadow. He's working on The Shadow at the moment. Yeah. It's great. Yeah.
He seems to be teasing Limbo 2 as well. I've seen a few teasers that kind of look Limbo-esque. Okay. I'm like, this is cool. And then we got Tom Foster as well. And we've got Gary Erskine too. Tom, cool. Again, Craig knows Tom. and I know Gary. So it was just like, who you know, who's your connections. And and that just speaks to like the power of things like Facebook and that, you know, that you can just, you know, people are just a few clicks away, you know.
It's a right mafia up in Scotland now. You've got a bit of a comics mafia going on up there, haven't you? We always laugh at the old, I think Iz calls it the Taffia, the Welsh mafia. The Welsh. I think you've got
a fucking ace name.
Yeah, she told me that last week. Yeah. You've got a little bit of a comics mafia going on up there. It's a real breeding ground, and it is the home of British comics, Scotland, isn't it? Let's face it.
It's crazy, actually. I mean, you've got things like the up in Dundee, the university actually has a comic studio now, Ink Pot.
You've got a statue to Desperate Dan in Dundee.
Yes, that's true. It's DC Thompson's up there, I mean, the Scottish scene is crazy. It's actually like really nice to see just how many people are getting, you know, Kickstarter success and, you know, doing well at cons or branching out and doing cons further afield.
And the cons hearing nothing but good things about, like Glasgow and Edinburgh and, you know, shows, which is just fantastic.
I think there's one in Glenrothes, isn't there? I don't know if it's just been gone.
Yeah. I believe it's in June or July. It's in the summer anyway. Gary Askins, actually, I think he's one of the curators for that. So he's heavily involved in that one, which is cool. I hear it's quite a nice one. I think what you find is there's a lot of like really nice family ones. And I think to your guys' point earlier about the one that was like all toys and stuff, right? It was just you're paying to buy merchandise, right? The Scottish ones all seem to have like workshops and like cool things for kids. And it's proper experience type stuff. I mean, of course, you've got like your Funko Pops and all that as well, which is fine, you know, but you've got a really good blend of like a good ratio between creators and merch and panels and workshops, and it's just I think they've really nailed it, you know.
I think having a couple of tables with coloring pencils and printouts of superheroes or panels or something for kids to get stuck into is such an easy go-to that they should kind of do. I mean, it's getting
Wimbledon. They had that. Weren't you in charge of it for an hour or something?
I got the written permission from the magistrates to do that. but they also did it. What do you call it? Leamington.
Yeah, of course they did. Yeah,
that was great. Yeah. Going through the cafe and they had all the people drawing and getting into it. That's how you want to get people into comics, is getting them making their own.
Even if just say the parents aren't really into comics, but they take their kids and the kids have a great time, then the parents go bring them the next year. I think it's, sometimes it's overlooked how important the next generation of readers is. You know, whether they're reading stuff that we have absolutely no interest in, if they're reading a comic, that's all good with me. I don't care what it is.
I was saying, I done the old Phoenix subscription. End of last week or after the show. I think it was on Monday. Yes. So, looking forward to when that comes through.
You should get your next comic, your first comic, next week or end of this week.
So I'm not sure how to kind of introduce it. Just kind of like, oh, you go, and let him read it. And then if he just slings it on the sofa, I have to read it. And
Dad of the year. There you go.
Wash my son into reading comics.
Right.
Please write in.
Yeah.
I just got I held his eyelids open and made him stare at comics.
Yeah, so you got the Clockwork Orange technique.
Technique, yeah. And I'd make him write a little essay on it every time he read a comic.
Yeah. No, you got it wrong. Do it again.
Yeah. Saying that, my boy's in his 20s now and he's still got a pull list. I may still be paying for it, but he has still got a pull list.
He slung a Watchman at him when he was 8.
Is that now right? Jesus, that would have killed him.
Yeah. Was Rorschach right in the end? Find the words.
Yeah. What happened in the prison?
So to finish off, like, what's the rollout plan for Killtopia now that the Kickstarter's done and you've got this sort of BHP sort of thing going on?
So we officially launch at Thought Bubble, which seemed like just the best place to launch it. And then literally, basically, once I get back from Leeds, I'm going to be bagging up all the Kickstarter copies and then mailing them out. Then the public launch there's the con launch, which is Thought Bubble, and the public launch is October 3rd. So you can pre-order it on the BHP site just now, and you'll get it on October 3rd.
Nice.
That's also when we hit that's when we hit Amazon and Waterstones and all the bookshops and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, there's going to be loads of ways you can get it. I'm sure we'll put it on Comic House as well. And yeah, so we're just going to try and get it out as many places as possible. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then straight into the Kickstarter for two, or what's the plan?
Well, I've got the Kickstarter in August for Vessels 3. Need to do that.
Right.
And then basically Killtopia will be every February. We're going to do the Kickstarter.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah.
Because like the nice thing about making so much
sort of European style.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. But I suppose like the nice thing about we made so much on that first campaign is that we will start making it before the February.
That's nice great. You can start paying artists to get
cracking. Yeah, that is good, isn't it?
Second one.
Yeah.
So I think ideally we're looking to have like half of the issue done before that February Kickstarter comes in. It means we can ask for less as well, which is good. So that's the whole aim here, is to try and make it more self-sustaining, you know, without having to rely too much on it.
I think some people look at an issue two and they think, why are they doing an issue two? Surely issue one must have paid for that. But it doesn't work quite that way with Kickstarter, doesn't it? Because Kickstarter is essentially a pre-order plus. So it's the plus bit that you're working with, isn't it? You know.
That's it. And of course, like the shipping costs and print costs. I mean, I think the physical backers, I think, was about just shy of 800 people. And if you imagine, like, the postage alone for that is going to be, that might be a grand disease, you know what I mean? So it's like, you know, bloody hell. You know, it doesn't all just go into the into the art, you know?
God, yeah. No. Oh, God, no.
Sometimes it's just easier just to buy a car and drive around the country posting it.
Well, we kind of talked about this before we did the ACP issue one, and we thought, like, the Kickstarter is going to be such a massive ball, like, we're just kind of...
Yeah, exactly what we thought, isn't it? I mean, the benefit we got is we got three people who are in jobs, you know, and we had other merch to sell to finance the first issue, and that's kind of where we sat with it, guys, didn't we? And then the sales of that are paying for the second issue, and that's kind of where we're going.
If that doesn't work out, we'll just sell either bits of Tony, or we'll just sell him as a sex slave.
Yeah, and if we get more than a tenner... then that'll be fine.
Well, yeah, that'll be right. Yeah, but there are no receipts and no refunds.
A Kickstarter has already kind of got a load of pages done and well on the way. That's more than likely to secure my kind of funding. It's usually when people are taking an absolute punt and saying, oh, we've got nothing. It doesn't show too much faith if you're not even bothered to get any fucking promotional art done.
I think Killtopia has obviously been a very well-deserved success, and I think it's going to be a book that a lot of people are going to be talking about in the end of
year. It's got a lot of buzz, man. I'll tell you,
Dave. It's definitely
it's been talked about a lot, isn't it? Yeah.
I think and if people anyone listening is looking at doing a Kickstarter, Dave wrote an absolutely fantastic article.
Oh God, yeah.
About the process.
That's
well worth checking out. That was a great read.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it was. I'm just a firm believer of like sharing the wealth, and you know how like we were talking about, you know, kids getting into comics, you know, at comic cons, and if I can help someone crowdfund their next book, then and they become, you know, that becomes the thing that gets them on the path, then why wouldn't I want to share that? You know.
Definitely.
I'm a firm believer in that. You know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm probably going to do more. Actually, I think Craig's going to do one on his art process as well, which is quite cool. Nice. But he's currently locked away in a dark room in Glasgow somewhere, actually working on the comic. So
allegedly.
The locked in the dark room bit, definitely.
Yeah.
Please give me some food, some water at the very least.
Finish
when a page. When a page comes under the door, complete, then. And you get some water.
Two pages, maybe we'll talk sunlight, but not until then.
Yeah. 10 pages, hand job.
Oh, God. No comment.
Yeah. That's actually how Tony reads his comics as well.
A little reward for 10 pages. It's got to need some funny looks on public transport.
I read a whole omnibus today. I'm feeling a little tired.
Oh, dear God. Anyway, that's put omnibuses in a completely dark light. And on that bombshell.
Oh, devil dinosaur.
That's not what you call it, is it?
That is my little name for it. I've told you my name
because it's red an early episode. And it's old. Anyway.
Anyway. Red and it's prehistoric. And it got cancelled in the 70s.
Oh dear. Anyway, where were we? Has anyone got any shout outs this week?
Go on, you got a big one. You go first, V. Go on.
Yeah.
Yes, first big shout out, we have to say. After Leamington Comic Con, we found out a little bit of news, which was a massive surprise to us.
As we were walking out the door of the church, we found out, didn't we? Yes. I went, oh, hang on, fucking hell, what's happened here? As I stared at my phone.
We just want to say thank you to anyone who was responsible for nominating, voting, or whatever that resulted in us winning a Yancey Street Award.
Yeah, bloody hell, I'm there.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
we was blown away. We was kind of kept speechless looking at each other.
I was going to say we paid someone off, but we're tighter than ourselves. We're not.
Yeah. It was a very lovely piece of news.
It was.
And thank you also to Sarah Harris, who was at Edinburgh Comic Con, and she picked up our award for us to hand our way. So But thank
you. Really nice.
It completely came out of the blue. Just even the nomination.
It did, didn't it?
Thank you to anyone who supported or liked this show enough to put our name forward for anything, really.
Yeah.
So
that's really surprised. We was up against the Kevin Smith one.
Yeah.
This is his mates who run that comic shop. Is it ISL Comics?
Yeah.
Something like that, isn't it? Yeah.
We did them. Yes.
Yeah. And like them, we didn't turn up to collect it either. But to be fair, we've always seen ourselves as a bit of an outsider, haven't we? Yeah. Really, we're not really in anywhere. You know, it's really nice. It was really nice.
Well, it very much goes like this: we've been nominated for an award. Really, that's amazing. We're never gonna win.
Yeah.
Yes. So thank you very much to everyone involved, and congratulations to all the other winners as well. So
yes, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Mr. Penguins won some, didn't he?
Yeah, nice. Yeah, well deserved.
Yeah, it's good. Top bloke. Nice one.
We definitely. I mean, Edinburgh Comic Con. We need to make it up there for one of them one day.
Do one day, mate. Yeah. It's a great city, and Dave's promised to put us up. So that's good.
Oh yeah.
Good.
My wife says it's fine. It's cool.
You wait till you see Vince's personal hygiene issues.
Smell it.
Yeah.
Happy belated birthday to Sarah Harris.
Yes.
Her birthday when she collected our award? Exactly. What a brilliant present for her.
Yeah. We agreed that it's going to stay at Vince's house.
It's going to Vince's house. We got visiting rights, haven't we? Yeah. Any time of day or night, we can climb in his window. Like a sexy burglar. Yeah.
And have a good old look at it.
But you
and the Yancey Street.
I knew that was happening.
Give it a good polish.
Tony, I've read 20 pages. Anyway, right. Okay.
Oh, dear. Here we go.
Now, another shout out. I went to the Cardiff Animation Festival. Has been happening in the past few days.
Nice.
I went to a small exhibition for the Chuck Steele. Night of the Trampires, which
nice.
Dan, it's like they made a film for you.
Brilliant!
It's just, it's sort of like a animation in the style of like Aardman animation and things like that. But this is totally balls to the wall, grown up humor, non PC, does not give a flying F about anything, and it's like 80. Just imagine everything from 80s action movies distilled into one character. And I know you like...
Nice.
You will absolutely love it. There's a short, which is Chuck Steele Raging Balls of Steel Justice, that I think you can find on YouTube. You should be able to. Just to get a flavour of the character. It's obviously Chuck Steele is like a badass cop from... You know, he just does whatever he wants. And there's... I think there's one of his colleagues is called... Jack Shit, but it's spelled SCHIITT.
There's a comics of that, Jack Shit.
Oh, hot shit.
Yeah.
It comes in a VHS case.
Really nice.
Yeah.
Nice. In Cardiff they had a exhibition which had like the models and some of like, you know, the actual sets and stuff, like proper tankers and pubs and stuff. I posted some stuff on Twitter. But I managed to catch up with Ian Matthews and Danny Abram, who were working on the festival anyway. And I know they both had their hands in the animation field for quite a couple of years. And they'll be coming back to comics. They'll be dragged back to comics somehow, kicking and screaming. But it was I just wanted to give a shout out for them. And has anyone else got any shout outs before I do my last one?
Oh, a couple. LCAF, they've announced a few things. There's an award. If you go to lcaf.co.uk, it's East London Comics Art Festival, run by No Brows, taking place between the 22nd and the 24th of June in East London. Go to the page because there's they're taking submissions from exhibitors past and present for a big prize, actually, £3,500 grant to print and publish their book for LCAF 2019. It's a really good competition. Also, as previously announced, Charlotte de Mortier is the artist in residence this year. She's a Belgian illustrator. Really interesting stuff going on there. Make sure you're going to go because I'm going to be there. I can't say why I'm going to be there at the moment, actually, because we've not announced it, but I'll be there for something. So, put that in your diaries. My other one is the three of us are going to be at the Comic Mart on Sunday, the 6th of May. So it's the day after New Comic Book Day. Pop down and have a chat because we'll probably have our microphone with us, lads, haven't we? And do a bit of recording.
Yeah.
So that's the 6th of May, Royal National Hotel, 38 to 51 Bedford Way. The nearest tubes are Russell Square or Euston. Come down for that. A couple of Kickstarters. First one, Away, which is John Lay, Grant Richards, Darren Stevens, Rob Jones, and Sidesy is the editor on that.
Nice.
Ripped from home to get the skills to save his world.
Yeah.
I started reading it today. I've had a bit of a busy week this week, so apologies, John. I haven't finished it yet, but it is fucking outstanding stuff.
Yeah.
Really good. I was speaking to Marcosia, who will be the publishers of it if it's successfully. It is already successfully kickstarted because it's passed its amount by a long way. I was speaking to Harry Marcos this morning around it. It looks great. And keep your eyes out for the Cognition Kickstarter, which launches, I think, the 2nd of May, which is, we love Cognition. It is a brilliant, brilliant book. So watch out for that one as well. There you go.
Nice.
That's what I've got.
I've got a bid on that. I've got kickstart that one.
Which one's that, dude?
Away.
Yeah, I've done Away. It's good. Yeah. It shows how good, I always think it shows how good something is. If I get a digital copy of it, I'll still kickstart it as well because I want a physical copy.
Nice.
And it's been a long time in the making. I think a couple of years, this book, and it shows a lot of care, and it's so detailed. Lovely stuff. Yeah.
Yeah,
I was going to quickly mention you're on another podcast, Vince, coming up. Stacey's podcast.
Yes, I am indeed.
A 24-hour podcast.
you're doing my work for me, Dan. I love this.
I think you've got a good slot. You're like kind of hour four or five in.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yep. Now, Stacey's Pop Culture Parlor. We had Stacey on the show for our Pop Culture Rumble once. She's a good laugh.
Yeah, that was a good show. It was a fun show.
Of the show. She every year she gets together with Barry Nugent of the Geek Syndicate podcast, and they do a 24-hour podcast for charity. Oh Lord, indeed, it's bad enough doing 2 hours with these guys.
It's gorgeous. It's a lovely experience.
It is. I feel euphoric at the end of
every. I honestly would break. Just mentally, physical break.
But it's always good time, and like Stacey, I'm going to be a guest for like 1 hour of it. It's taking place on Saturday, 28th of April. So I think it's going to be streaming live. Yes, it will be broadcasting at mixlr.com/spcp-live. And you can give, it's all for the British Heart Foundation. They're trying to raise the target of £1,000. So definitely go to the page, which is justgiving.com/spcplive3. Pledge, because, and she's got loads of different guests and it's going to be going on all through the day. I think she's.
So what slot are you on?
On 11 o'clock in the morning. So I'm.
That's not a bad little slot. No.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I've been wise there, haven't I?
I've offered up Stacey to do. I want to do a commission for as a prize to give away.
Oh, nice!
Yeah, nice.
So maybe you can talk and then give away that bit on your segment, Vince.
Oh,
if she hasn't got plans otherwise, that'd be something to do.
I'll tell you what, I'll donate some graphic novels or something as well. You can give them away. That's good.
Nice.
Yeah, so if you've got anything to give away or donate to the show as prizes, get in touch with Stacey and let's make a few quid for the British Heart Foundation.
Yeah, nice, totally. Man. Very good cause. At Stacey's Parlour, she is on Twitter, so get in touch. And on the day, look for the hashtag SPCPLive. And it's going to be a good day.
I'll be listening to that. Did we take call-ins? Because that'd be brilliant.
Oh, fucking hell. Jesus Christ. I've got to buy a throwaway phone and ring up with a silly voice on it.
You don't need a throwaway phone for that, Terry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. So there you go. Right. Okay. Let's take this. Let's ride this pony home. It's time.
Well, have you got any shout-outs, Dave?
Yeah, just want to give a shout out to Fraser Campbell and Ian Laurie and Rob Jones for the Edge Off.
Great,
fantastic. Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan of Ian's. We chat a lot about Twin Peaks and lots of really weird.
Oh, mate, I'm a big Twin Peaks
fan.
Oh, I love Twin Peaks.
Yeah, dude. He's really into the sort of cerebral, visceral, sort of dark, twisted stuff and. Basically, I think from what I've heard, that the Edge Off is pretty much all of that ramped up to the 10th degree. So it's like, I'm really looking forward to it. I've purposely not asked to see any of it yet because I just want it to be fresh when I get the print.
It'll melt your brain.
We've read it, haven't we, guys? Yeah. It is good. Yeah, really good.
Yeah.
And I think one of the prizes, you can get a page of original artwork, can't you? As one of the, if you go to the Kickstarter, you can actually get a page of Ian's work, and it looks great.
Yeah.
Cool.
Cracking stuff. So, from great comics to more great comics, because as always, we do recommendations at the end of the show. So, who wants to go first? I've got a super quick one this week.
Go on, you do yours then. Well, no, I can
tuck myself in between a couple of others. Do you know what I mean?
My one's quick as well because I've had a chance to read it entirely. So, should we do a long one, short?
Shall I go first then?
Go on then.
Yeah, this is good.
It's not too long. Long and thin mug in, short and thick does the trick. That's what they say, so it's all right.
How many times have I heard that on this show?
Tony's trying to work into the zeitgeist of the listeners.
Yeah.
Right, if you see Vince in the street, say it to him. So I'm going to do the Good Comics Reader, which I picked up from the good people at Good Comics at Leamington last week. It's A4. Did you guys see it at all?
No, I didn't get a chance to see this one, actually. I wanted to check out Good Comics, but I didn't get a chance.
I do what I always fucking do, say I'm going to go around and then never do, and then it's the end of the day.
it's a bit of a taster of work from people they've worked with previously or will be working with soon. But it's printed on, it's like A4, but it's printed on real old school 2000 AD style paper, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's partly for charity. So profits are donated to youngminds.org.uk, which is a charity helping young people and their mental health. Really good cause. There's loads of people in this who we've chatted with and friends of ours and stuff like that. So I thought I'd go through a few that sort of stood out to me, just sort of personally. The first one is Ravine by Rosie Hathaway, who we've spoken about numerous times. I think we did an interview with her last year at Leamington 2017. It's about a human who is stressed by the sort of daily stuff of bills and work and all that sort of thing. So that person becomes a fox and wanders the neighbourhood. And it's no more than that, really. He just sort of wanders around, not being stressed because he's now become a fox, which I kind of like. It's done with that sort of brushy, sort of watercolory thing that Rosie is so good at. The fox is sort of in a browny red wash, and the rest of the world is in a sort of bluey grey. She does some lovely stuff in it. Some of the best stuff I think I've seen her do. There's a sort of street scene with the fox sort of running down the street and then climbing a wall and drinking from a puddle. And then almost the final page is a big splash page of it, sort of a fox sitting between two trees in what looks like a sort of residential garden with a sort of ghostly figure of a man above it. Yeah, really, really nice. Really good stuff. The next one that I really liked was Angeline by John C. Douglas. Has anyone heard of him?
No.
I bumped into him at LCAF a couple of years ago. It's got that sort of real sort of cleverly sharp
style to it, sharp and clear lines, if that makes sense. It's done in a sort of dark blue and white, so nothing in this comic is strictly black and white, if that makes sense. It's all done in the sort of almost like a wash color, and it's about basically a woman in the middle of the night, in the sort of still of the night, who she sort of has that moment of clarity that we all have at about 3 a.m. don't we, if we're sitting up, you know, a dose of insomnia, and sort of sits in the front room and smokes and looks around at the mess of beer bottles and the guitar in the room. And she's obviously around her lover's house, and she just decides to leave. And she makes that decision that she's had enough of him, and she decides to leave, and she walks down the road as the sun's coming up. And it's really beautifully done. Really nice. I really, really like that story. There's the last one that I'll mention is, well, there's so many good people in it, is A Life in Rage. This is by Josh Hicks, who's also part of the Taffir, I think. I'm going to read this one to you because it's very short. So it's a 9-panel grid. On each panel is a picture of the life of a person from being a baby and screaming onwards, if that makes sense. So it's got torn from the womb, disappointed by structural integrities of sandcastles, gently teared by peer group, perceived slight surrounding workplace seating plan, perceived slight surrounding canned vegetable brand, perceived slight surrounding online newspaper comment section. So it sort of goes through the person's life, and he's sort of screaming at his computer at the online newspaper comment section. Golf-based incident of him throwing his golf club at someone. On-green cardiac arrest. So the bloke sort of dies on the golf course, and it's just got a picture of reincarnated as a seagull and a seagull swearing. It's just sort of this sort of really cool sort of nine-panel grid of a page of the sort of the life of sort of urban England, you know, or perhaps urban Wales, I don't know, but really nice. It's only £6. Also of note, at stories by Robin William Scott. Robin does this sort of really sort of intricate, highly written, densely populated pages of sort of diary comics, and they're really worth looking out for if you ever see anything by Robin. Olivia Sutherland does something. Sullivan, I love Olivia's stuff. Elizabeth Querstritt's in it. She does a sort of thing about do I believe in God or not, which is typical Elizabeth, and as funny as always. And Sam Williams and Paddy Johnson have also got the two guys who sort of run good comics. Go to goodshop.bigcartel.com. It's only £6, and it goes to a good charity. Or you can go to @good_comics on Twitter and find out a bit more. Yeah, nice stuff. It's a nice little thing that a small press indie publisher puts out. This, you know, it's they're obviously a bit of a family, the Good Comics crowd. You know, they're all sort of friends, and they it's to promote these artists, and they put out a little thing for charity. Really good, really nice stuff. There you go. That's my one.
Nice.
Awesome.
And Dan, what's yours?
My one is it's a title just recently uploaded to Comics House. It's called Rebound Volume 1.
Oh yeah.
This was sent over to us during the week by Kieran Squires, who's an absolute legend. The story synopsis is: Rebound is an anthology book aimed at broadening the reach of indie comics by driving traffic towards the creators and their projects through publishing whole or parts of work in collective volumes. I've seen a couple of the stories in this, and they're good ones. There's a whole raft of creators. I'll mention a few. Kieran Squires, as previously mentioned, Bradley Golden, Thomas Hugo, Frank Martin. Artist wise, you've got Matt Rook, Glenn B, Lucas. Oh God, I'm not going to even try that surname. But there's a whole bunch of creators in this title. It's 104 pages, absolutely reams of comic here. We was talking about this earlier about comic processes. There's a nice page where one of the artists breaks down how to color hair. And it kind of popped out of my mind. I was like, oh, this is a great little tutorial. And obviously, when you've got like the digital format, you can kind of sprinkle this in as and when you want. And I think it's a great little way of kind of not only introducing people to new comics, but also giving a few sort of tips and pointers along the way. It's really nice. I didn't see the one coming, but there's a whole selection of different titles and comics in there. And check it out on Comic House. Just make sure you've got enough room on your device to download it, because it's quite chunky.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, here's my quick one, super quick one this week. But I know it's one that is going to tick Tony's box.
Yay!
And it's one that I've had since London Super Comic Con and just started reading recently. And it's kind of melting my brain. And it's a book from Valiant. And it is the first volume of Divinity.
Oh, mate, how good.
Yeah, it's great.
It is, it's something else. It's truly, it's hard to describe.
Space rock, my man. It's like a Hawkwind album come to life.
It is epic. It is personal. It is action-packed. It is quiet. And it's a story that I was not expecting. I mean,
it's quite a touching story as well,
yes,
isn't it? You know,
yes, it ends on an absolute heartbreaking moment. Like, for those who don't know, Divinity is about an astronaut who gets sent into space. Essentially, that's what it is, and he comes back with powers. He comes back changed, shall we say, into this ultra powerful being. And he was sent from Russia, and he's a communist. So it's
But the iconography in that as well, the sort of Soviet design is just part of it for me. It's just who's the artist on it again? I forget his name. Sorry,
the artist. I'll just look at it here. Is it Trevor Hairson?
Oh, Trevor Hairson. Yeah, Trevor I don't think he's ever been this good. I absolutely love this. No. Yeah,
it is. The art wasn't something I was expecting when I started reading the book. It sort of and it immediately hits you.
Almost a little bit British comics, the art, to me, a little bit, you know.
Yeah, and the pacing, there is a certain cinematic pacing. But, I mean, I haven't read too much of Matt Kint's, comics before.
He's good, isn't he?
I've heard a lot of a good word about his, and I know he's been an indie sort of powerhouse before moving into Valiant and stuff. He hasn't done any big two work yet, has he, or has he?
He has, I think. I'm trying to figure out which it is.
As I understand it, he treats
the Valiant stuff almost like it's an image book, which is about the nearest you'll get a Valiant for that.
And it is.
It's almost like Valiant's version of Watchmen in a way.
Yes.
I mean, it's got that sort of knowing ennui thing going on, isn't it? Yeah. You know?
And there are bigger concepts going on that anyone could truly even, the human mind wouldn't be able to contemplate what's going on because it's so vast. And, as I was reading it, I got a couple of issues in, and then all of a sudden, like Exo Man of War and Ninjak and stuff like that, they turn up, and I was like, whoa, I did not expect that to happen.
They were part of the Unity team, weren't they? They were brought into taking down, weren't they?
Yeah. But I did not expect that to happen so quick. I thought the first book would be about him, and then you bring the others in, in the later to trades and stuff. But this is, if you want to get into the Valiant universe. I know they're putting out some great books, but it's getting to a point where they're putting out so much that it may be quite daunting for some people. Where do I start with Valiant? They're getting to that kind of area. Divinity is definitely a story that you should try.
And whilst Exo and Ninjak and the Unity team are in it, it is self-contained. It's a self-contained story.
Completely.
I think was there four or five volumes of it now, I think.
Yes. Yeah. So the first one collects Divinity 1-4.
You can read that. Now, you could be done. If you just read that, that would be a great story.
And it starts off, and it's very narrative in its storytelling. It's telling the story of a man who went to space and how his life completely changed. And, and it did.
And I'm going to treat myself and watch the Valiant web series tonight. I've been meaning to help him.
Oh, nice. Awesome. Because that's come about now, isn't it? Yeah.
Aren't they updating it once a week or something like that?
Is there four episodes out already, I think? I've got a feeling there might be. But Archer and Armstrong are in it, and Exo and Ninjak and Eternal Warrior and all the great characters. I can't wait to see it, actually.
And,
really exciting.
If you see Valiant like a bigger show, they always put on great deals for like first volumes and stuff. So.
They do, don't they? Yeah. And they're nice people as well. They're really friendly. Yeah, they really are.
Yes, definitely check it out. And I mean, the tagline alone on the back of the book said, "Earth is about to meet a new god." And but the blurb on the back, the sort of story synopsis, how sometimes I read out just a quick synopsis so people know what it's about. I couldn't do that here because you'd be about 20 minutes before I finish.
Right, yeah. It's a real sort of existentialist kind of thing, isn't it? Yeah. The sort of nature of reality it's very clever.
Yeah, because the narrative is almost from the main character, yet not. And there's lots of... very good. But
it's a Russian guy, but he's also a black guy.
Yes,
and it kind of twists your preconceptions a little bit about it very cleverly, I think.
I think that's the best way to put it. The whole book sort of completely changed. My preconceptions of it were not completely just blown out of the water. Yeah, it's a great book.
You look at it and you think it's covers, like an old Soviet
Yeah. Oh, they're brilliant. Yeah,
the,
lovely.
The covers are well. We got what we got here. Cover artist. Oh, I can't pronounce that. But yeah, they're some of the best covers ever. If you just look at the Divinity covers, they're yeah. they are amazing. Amazing stuff. So yeah, there you go. That's mine. So Dave, is there anything you'd like to recommend to listeners before we sign off?
Yeah, a comic by a good friend of mine here in Edinburgh. It's a series called Boat, by a chap called Dave Lumsden.
Oh yes, yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting premise. I always sort of say to people it's a bit like Waterworld, and then they're like, you know, the Kevin Costner film, and then they're like, hold on, mate, that's not really a good sell. But something's happened. So Scotland is flooded. You know, everything's pretty much below sea level, that kind of thing. The everywhere's flooded, basically. Mm. And, you know, some people live in Edinburgh Castle, because that's up high on like an old sort of volcanic sort of structure, and then you've got other people living in high buildings nearby. So basically Scotland's descended into this like tribalism where people try to find places above water to live. We have some tribes who kind of worship the sharks that circle the streets and stuff, and volume one, yeah, it's fantastic. Like volume one basically looks at a boy and his son. A man and his son trying to find a place to live, coming into Edinburgh on this little boat. And then the rest of the arc, it's up to volume three now, but I think he's working on volume four just now as well. It's about the son growing up in this world above the waves in Scotland, and just like all the sort of crazy like cults that have arisen, and there's weird creatures out in the rooftops and stuff. And I think I can't remember who mentioned it before, you know, books that have, they're almost black and white, but they actually feel like they have color.
Yeah.
Boat has this thing where it's very little of the, so there's no backgrounds that are white, for example. The shade of white is actually used very sparingly. It's all okay. Shades of gray. So it's just using grays and blacks, like actually feels like it's in color because of all the different types of gray that they've used. And it's just this really fantastic story. It's definitely worth checking out. Yeah, really good. It's also issue one actually started. It was actually a film before it was a comic series.
Really,
Dave's actually a filmmaker. Right. Yeah. So he made the sort of story about the boy and his dad on the boat using green screen, obviously of Edinburgh. And it's a really great. It was actually at some Tokyo Film Festival last year.
Mm. Right.
And they took like copies of the book over and localized them and stuff. Yeah. So it was a film first, and then he turned it into a series, and yeah, I think so volume four is next, but I think that's on Comic House as well, so definitely worth checking out.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So there you go, folks, lots of brilliant comics to check out as always, and we hope we hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you again, Dave, for joining us.
Cheers, Dave.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, my pleasure. Really happy to be here.
This will not be the last time we talk about Kiltopia.
No, God no.
Thank you.
And it'll be next positive, week, don't worry.
Yeah. I said next week's our breakdown of the Avengers Infinity War film.
We're in competition with 80,000 other podcasts.
We're going.
We can't ruin who we got next week because you announced it, don't you, Vince? But we're going old school next week, aren't we, guys?
Yeah,
we're going old
school. No school like the old school.
Yeah. No, that's it.
Yes, but we hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Now that we're back in the game, you know, back from the convention floor.
Yeah,
yeah, cooking with gas.
It was only 1 week away from it, and I forgot that I had to have earphones in to listen to you guys. That's fucking awful.
Oh dear, 1 week away and you fall apart, Butcher.
Yeah, I had to run downstairs, grab the earphones. I was like, "Fuck, knob."
You're so harsh on yourself. Yeah. I don't like this.
Yeah. A look into how we won that Yancey Street Award there. Levels of professionalism.
Yeah.
Was it the phrase you used, Vince? We walked it.
Yeah.
The least professional people I know. Yeah. And there you go.
Yeah. But thank you for liking us. Anyway, you can get in touch with us about anything. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. If you've read and liked our own comic, Awesome Comics, issue one, and you want to send it, with the submissions for the letters column is still open, isn't it, Tony?
Yeah, still room for letters.
So you can send your letters to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. That's been one of the more popular bits of the book, that letters
page,
which is
got lots of feedback on that.
And there's some exciting stuff, other stuff that's going to appear in issue two. So there you go.
I know of what you speak.
Yes, and it's good. Awesome. I
showed it to someone else. They go, oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah. There you go.
Good.
I nodded at them.
You did that nod again, didn't you?
Yeah. His nod is brilliant, as is our Twitter at The Awesome Pod, where we shout about who the oncoming guests are. We have our Thursday Kickstarter call out.
Yeah.
Because if we were talking about Kickstarters all the time, that's literally would be our full time jobs. So we've got every Thursday, if you have a comic book Kickstarter, then contact us at The Awesome Pod on Twitter. Tell us about it and we will retweet and spread the word about it.
Use the hashtag.
Hashtag Kickstarter call out. There you go. Now go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. Like us on there. And if you like talking about comics and making comics, or just going to comic conventions, and you don't want to hear any cheap sales talk, then go to Awesome Comics Talk on Facebook.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic group. And we like to see all the interaction that's going on there. It's always good. Always good.
Yeah.
So, and thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe, spread the word, give us a nice review, because that's always nice, isn't it? You know, be a bit nice.
Subscribing's good, isn't it? We go straight into your downloads.
Yeah.
And we straight away.
Yeah. We'll go straight into your downloads. Yeah. And you can't stop us. That's the most threatening I've ever been on this show.
The worst metaphor ever.
I'm going to get you right in your downloads.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. Whether it was on, maybe you listen to us on the Stitcher Network, the Podnose Network.
Maybe you do.
Pod Knife Network. Or what other networks are we on, Tony?
I believe we're on the Pod Poop Tart Network.
Sorry. He's back in the game.
In the game.
Yeah. He never went away. Thank you for listening to us wherever you found us. Before we sign off, where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
I'm going to forego mine because all you do is hear about me talking about myself all the time, non-stop mailers and fucking tweets. So I've decided to start choosing people that I like and whose art I enjoy.
You're such a hipster.
I know, yeah. So this week I'm going with good old Jen Brown. We love Jen's artwork, don't we?
Oh, yeah.
And past collaborator with me. She draws literally the best faces you will ever see and the best to talk about hair tutorials. She could give you a tutorial on hair, I'll tell you that now. She draws the best hair on the internet. Yep. Go to dragonfairydesign.co.uk or go to jenbrown.bigcartel.com and buy some of her art. I own quite a few pieces and love it. And she's at Jen, J-E-N, Risa, R-H-Y-S-S-A 28, Jen Risa 28 on Twitter. There you go, that's my one.
Well worth it. Where can people find you, Dan?
You can read Vanguard at I fucked it up. I'm on Twitter at Vanguard Comic. Can you read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com?
Hey. You did that on purpose.
Yeah. if you want to find out more about my comic, then you can go to redmouseformars.com and follow me on Twitter at Jester Diablo and Mr. Dave Cook. Thank you again for joining us. Where can people find you?
So we're on Facebook at facebook.com/KiltopiaComic. I'm also on Twitter at Dave S. Cook. And we're also on www.cardsharkcomics.com.
Nice.
Cool.
Awesome.
There you go, folks. You've got no excuse not to check out Brilliant Comics this week. So, but thank you for listening to us. And from Dan, Tony, Dave, and myself, read some of those comics. Have an amazing week. And as always, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.
I was just looking at my script, Tony, and I've written Tony Osmond, which makes...
Yes. Fuck you. Yes, do it. Do Tony Osmond.
Have you ever been called an Osmond?
Loads of times. Yeah.